Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is May 6th, 2017, and this is episode 136, News Roundup. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, as is normal for us to do in May, we are beginning our first in a series of episodes about various news and current events before E3 next month. Slaggy, how excited are you for E3 next month?
I mean, I'm a little jealous that I'm not going to be able to be there in person, but E3 is always a fun time. I'm looking forward to seeing, I mean, especially with Switch now out, I'm really excited to see what we're going to hear from Nintendo, and, you know, just seeing what everybody has to offer is always exciting. I mean, you never really know what you're going to get, and I mean, we've got some good Square Enix announcements this year, because, you know, they've got some good things in the pipeline. Sony usually always puts on a good show. Ubisoft sometimes puts on a show that has some level of entertainment value. So.
Ubisoft sometimes puts on a show, period.
And, you know, Xbox does their thing, so, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting also to see how hearing people, you know, going down there, because, I mean, I know a lot of people just on my Twitter feed and stuff who are going to be down there, so it'll be interesting to hear their perspectives and...
Hey, I should be one of those people.
Right, right.
I may not be, unfortunately, due to some stuff at work, but I'm doing everything I can to ensure that I can go.
Well, if not, then we'll just have to do the usual and watch streams and make bingo cards.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like that's a win for me either way.
Aw, bitch.
Shut up. All right, well, as ever and always, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits.
And Slide now.
Do you want to get us started?
Yeah, so Dengeki Nintendo was talking to Hitoshi Yamagami-san, who is the series producer for Fire Emblem, and he had mentioned that Fire Emblem Echoes is likely to be the last mainline Fire Emblem game for 3DS, so... Sounds like after that, they're probably going to be moving on to the Switch.
Yeah, well, you know, we know that Fire Emblem Warriors is going to be getting a Switch version in addition to the 3DS release. And we know that there's a Fire Emblem mainline game in development for the Switch already.
Yeah.
So this sounds to me like Intelligent Systems is closing the door on the 3DS after this.
Well, along with a lot of other people, I think.
Right. We also have word here, according to a recent report by the Wall Street Journal, that when the Nintendo Switch released in March, Nintendo was using aircraft shipment in order to get more units of the Nintendo Switch into stores in North America and Europe in order to meet the incredibly high demand for the console. You know, they had, as we had noted here on the show, increased their production numbers, and it would seem that they were using incredibly pricey aircraft shipping to get those newly produced units to stores. The interesting thing here is, you know, we constantly hear people talking about Nintendo's artificial shortages and how, you know, they're under shipping in order to create hype. But honestly, when you're looking at the costs of air freight per unit, that typically ends up costing $35 to $50. So basically any profit that Nintendo would be making on these individual Switches is eaten up by the cost of that shipment. If you're one of those people who thinks that artificial shortages are a thing Nintendo is doing intentionally, this is actually a pretty big indication that that is not the case, at least in the instance of Switch.
And, you know, I feel like every once in a while I'll see some of the, you know, Twitter accounts that, like, kind of track the deals and stuff. I'll see every once in a while, like, oh, a Walmart bundle is available now. So it seems like at least every 2 weeks, if not every week, there's at least a little bit of stock at some place, whether it's Best Buy, Toys R Us, Amazon, Walmart.com, or wherever.
Yeah, Walmart, in fact, just had some units in stock yesterday for about 5 minutes. I've actually been following some different, like, in-stock trackers, just because I kind of want to have my finger on the pulse of how this thing is doing, and it seems like it is never available for very long anywhere. I actually have two friends who have both asked me to let them know when I see them. And to date, neither of them have gotten the links I've emailed them fast enough to make use of it.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable stuff. We also have word here that Mario Kart 8 Deluxe took the number one sales position for the last week of April. This is a big deal because it's actually the first time since 2011 that Nintendo has taken the top mark like that.
And that's in the UK, right?
That is in the UK, yes.
Wow.
They are typically not as successful in the UK as they are here or Japan. And the last time that they had number one on the UK charts was Pokemon White for the DS.
Oh, wow. Not even for other Pokemons. I'm surprised.
Yep.
Well, also surprising is that 1-2 Switch is almost a million seller, and Super Bomberman R is at about 500,000 units. I think that Super Bomberman R is actually the bigger surprise, because Bomberman and Konami and not Patchy Slot, and...
I'm gonna blow your mind. With this number in mind, and, you know, this is through March, so at this... through April, so at this point, these numbers are probably higher by now. But I'm gonna blow your mind. Super Bomberman R, Bomberman right now is probably more profitable and more well-known than Bomberman has ever been since its inception.
Which is crazy.
Well, right? So, I don't know. I mean, I know that we were all skeptical, but Konami has continued to patch Super Bomberman R. They're continuing to provide free DLC. We already know that there's going to be more free DLC coming down the pipeline. I dare say that Super Bomberman R was a grand slam for them and a well-deserved success.
All right, Konami.
All right.
Snipperclip's also sitting at about 350,000 downloads as of the reporting of this data. So,
oh, nice. You know, something else I'm really excited about Super Bomberman R is that Konami had previously indicated that if it did well, they would continue looking at their portfolio for other IP they could bring back this way. So, fingers crossed, you know, they're sitting on the whole Hudson Soft IP portfolio. I would love to see a Bonk return, like Super Bonk R or whatever. You know, hell, give it anything Konami wants to do. They have such an incredible IP portfolio.
Switch Gungeon.
Yes! Oh, I need it now.
Well, in other big Japanese gaming industry giant news, I mean, I guess if you could still call Konami that, although I guess they're kind of maybe on their way back, but Capcom is teasing...
Hey, there are a lot of Japanese software and studios and publishers that would love to have a 500,000 seller in the modern day.
So Capcom has revealed that there is a, quote, major title to be released within the next fiscal year, and which is ending, you know, March 31st of 2018.
And let's be clear, they're referring to it as quote-unquote major title because it is an unannounced game.
And the platform and everything else is not announced, but...
There's a lot of people betting that this is going to be a new Manhunt either for Switch or PS4. What are your thoughts on that?
I had heard about the possibility about Manhunt going back to Sony, which is going to be interesting.
It is to date a rumor going around, and you know, we haven't talked about it here because I don't actually find it to be a particularly credible rumor.
I mean, do people in Japan have PS4s, kind of?
There are a few million PS4s out there, but I mean, let's put it this way. After a month, the Switch is already closing in on where PS4 was after a year.
I feel like a Switch Manhunt would be... A Switch Manhunt would move units in Japan.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, maybe there might be people who would buy a PS4 in Japan for Manhunt. The problem is Manhunt in Japan is particularly like a social game.
Right, and that's what I was...
And I don't mean like online social. I mean literally like going to cafes with your friends and your portable consoles and playing together in the same space.
I mean,
PS4 doesn't really offer that. Switch does.
And I feel like when we were even talking about the rumor of Switch being portable, that like the idea of Manhunt being a, you know, flagship title for it was something we talked about, like, way before we even knew what the Switch really was for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I will say I certainly wouldn't mind if it was a PS4 and a Switch game, but I think if it's a PS4 exclusive game that, you know, Capcom's kind of shooting themselves in the foot. I've seen a lot of people say, you know, the only way that Western audiences will really pick up on Manhunt is if it's on a console. Of course, the fact that the most recent 3DS Manhunt games have been million sellers in North America, I think diffuses that.
Remember the last time Manhunt was on a console on Wii U, and then everyone's like, I'd rather just play it on my 3DS?
Yeah, right?
And then they didn't put it on...
Although the other factor there is it was a Wii U. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Wii U. This isn't news. But let's be clear, the market rejected it. So I don't think that's fair to compare.
Yeah. What else besides...
All I know is that it's a title that they believe is going to sell more than 2 million units worldwide.
What else besides Monster Hunter?
At this point, they don't have much.
Like, what else besides Monster Hunter could it be?
I don't know. Like, a new Street Fighter game that isn't a new version of Street Fighter 2? Except, oh wait, Street Fighter 5 didn't do that well either.
Oops. Well, Blaster Master Zero has a version 1.2 update, including two new game modes and some DLC characters, including Gunvolt.
Yeah, you know, this is really, really exciting. These two new characters, one is Gunvolt from, of course, the Gunvolt games. The other is Ekoro from Galgun.
Oh, yeah.
In both of these cases, the characters bring with them their abilities from their games. So Gunvolt brings, you know, his energy shield and his needle gun that he can use to target enemies and then stun with lightning. He has different physics for his jumps and stuff. It's actually like a completely different game experience. Ekoro has like some flight hovering slash hovering abilities, the ability to like charm enemies with hearts. And so it's, you know, it's basically two very different ways to play Blaster Master Zero.
That's really cool.
I think this is super cool. And something else that's cool is that Gunvolt, who is available for download now, will be free until May 17th.
Oh.
After that, he will be a $2 download. Ekoro will be free from June 1 to June 14, after which she will be a $2 download. And my own personal theory, you'll note Ekoro stops being free during E3. I'm hoping at E3 they're going to announce more DLC.
That's cool.
Fingers crossed on that. Just a theory, not a for sure thing. What I do know, what is a for sure thing, is that Gunvolt is fantastic in this game, and it's just really awesome to see this game getting supported like this. I have been a longtime Blaster Master fan, and I feel like the series is only finally getting the love it has deserved for the last 20 plus years.
Leave it to Nintendo. So we got some Dragon Quest news.
Yes.
I think there's always going to be a Dragon Quest news. We bring it to you every episode. This one's really cute, though.
Yeah. This is a PlayStation 4 Special Edition Dragon Quest Lodo Edition. So it is a really, really cute Dragon Quest 11 version of the PS4. It has this really cool, like, blue and gold color scheme. It has, like, an insignia from the game, both on the console and on the touchpad of the controller.
It almost really reminds me of, like, the Zelda editions of 3DSs and such.
Oh, yeah.
And it has a little liquid metal slime USB cover.
Yeah, right? And the, adorably, the controller also has a little liquid slime on it. It just is really cool. Comes with a free exclusive theme. Just really cool package. It will be releasing July 29th, the same day as Dragon Quest XI comes out in Japan.
Hey, maybe that'll move some PS4s in Japan.
Oh, yeah, it probably will. Except it's also coming out on 3DS, so people might just play it on the 3DS they already have.
But that's the one that has, like, different play styles or visuals, right?
So, different visuals, yes. What we're really going to learn is if Japan gives a fuck about HD gaming.
True.
And I don't mean that to be, like, combative or confrontational. I mean, I actually think that a lot of people are looking at this as a litmus test for what's more important to gamers interested in this series in particular. You know, is it the gameplay they're looking for? Or do they want big, fancy storytelling?
Wait, gamers caring about gameplay? Gasp.
It's more likely than you think. We also have word here that Overwatch has reached 30 million registered players.
That doesn't surprise me.
This game is only now a year old. Like, next week, I believe, is the anniversary of its release, and is at 30 million registered players. That is ridiculous. Of course, you know, we're big fans of Overwatch here in the studio. I think this is super well-deserved. What do you think, Slaggy?
Oh, yeah, I mean, this is, like, their biggest... like, franchise now, I mean, which is crazy, but, I mean, you think, like, Hearthstone was pretty big for a while, and I still suppose it's pretty big, but, I mean, this just really took off, and, I mean, 30 million players, I mean, could you imagine if World of Warcraft, if they had those numbers, but I guess they don't really need those numbers, because, you know, people are buying loot boxes, and, you know, so it's really interesting to see with, like, Overwatch and Hearthstone and Heroes of the Storm that Blizzard's really found more success with those than their flagship titles, or what we used to consider their flagship titles.
Yeah, I was just going to say, maybe the flagship has changed. Let's see, we also have word here that PlayStation Plus users in North America can now download a demo, a fully featured demo, of Guilty Gear Xrd Rev 2. This is exciting stuff. The full game, of course, will be releasing later this May, but before then, you can download this demo and play a bunch of different characters and really see if the game is a good fit for you. Really exciting stuff. I always think it's interesting when we see publishers, particularly Axis, I feel like does this kind of thing a lot, where they really give the player like a meaty experience with the game to see if it's a good fit for them.
Mm.
I like this. I think it's super pro-consumer, and I would like to see more of this kind of thing.
Awesome.
We also have word here of Nioh's Dragon of the North DLC. This is a new story DLC that came out this week that actually allows the player to fight notable Japanese historical figure Masamune Date. This is very exciting stuff, of course. We also see the debut with this DLC of a new PvP mode, which is obviously locked behind PlayStation Plus. Saigi, have you been getting into Nioh at all?
No, I've heard good things about it, though. Or at least, you know, overall positive things.
Excellent. Well, this is exciting stuff. And if you're playing Nioh and you've played this DLC, let us know what you think.
We have a new Dissidia Final Fantasy Arcade character reveal coming on May 9th, so probably shortly after you hear this, or actually probably by the time you hear this, because I don't know how to count on a calendar. This is going to be coming on an upcoming Nico Nico live stream, which will start at 8 p.m. Japanese Standard Time.
Well, and it's something that a lot of people have been pointing out online. It's actually going to feature a guest voice actor, Arthur Lounsbury.
Is he a Tonberry?
Well, we could be. We don't know who he's voicing. Typically, these reveal streams that have guest voice actors are the voice actors that voice the new character that's being revealed. To date, Arthur Lounsbury has done very little voice acting in his career, and none of it has been for Final Fantasy characters. So a lot of people are assuming this is going to be a new character for the Dissidia series.
Ooh, that's so interesting.
Internet detectives! We also have word here that Atlus has eased up on their Persona 5 streaming guidelines, as well as offered an apology to fans that were disappointed of the streaming restrictions previously placed on the game. You know, they basically now they're encouraging people to stream a little further into the game to a later in-game date than previously, basically right up to the beginning of the third act of the game. Something that I will say a lot of us are still a little prickly about is that, you know, they haven't changed the ability to, like, screenshot in-game or whatever, and although they have ostensibly loosened their restrictions, it sort of seems to be in name only, since all of the previous threats for breaking their rules remain in place, including a punitive use of content ID strikes. What's your take on that, Slaggy?
You know, it's just it's really interesting to see between this and the way that Persona 5 handles queer content and the controversy that that's created. Like, this has caused a game that really has been anticipated by a lot of people for good reason. The anticipation is for good reason. A lot of people are really, I've heard a lot of people say that they're not going to keep playing Persona 5 or that they aren't even interested in picking it up now. And it's just really interesting to see, you know, a series that has been so beloved kind of really getting a lot of heat.
Hey, I myself have been very critical of Persona 5, particularly, you know, the streaming restriction thing and, as you say, the LGBT representation issue.
Yeah.
And for me, the thing is, I've been a fan of the Persona series for a very long time, since the PlayStation 1 days. And literally, they have represented LGBT characters way better than Persona 5 handles them previously. Characters with, like, side stories that sort of touch on LGBT representation,
you know,
issues,
it's really
handled better, I would say.
The thing that's interesting, not to get into a side discussion, is that,
hey, you know, one of the fun things about these news focus episodes, we can do a little more talk about these news pieces, so have that,
you
man.
Know, a lot of people in reflection, or, you know, in light of the way that the thing is that it's apparently just a very minor minor section and like very minor characters, but it's just they apparently they were so off the mark that people are like legit pissed off about it. And I've seen a lot of people say, you know, Persona 4 really didn't do it that well because, oh, Kanji is not gay and Naoto is not trans.
Kanji is always going to be gay to me, first off. And the Naoto thing, yeah, I can see I'm not a trans person, and if that's how trans people feel about that representation, then absolutely.
My thing is that at least, even if they missed the mark a little bit, for a Japanese developer to have been willing to explore with their main party characters themes of gender and sexuality and finding out, like, trying to figure out your identity, even if they didn't quite nail it, I thought Persona 4, you know, really, I think it deserves a lot of credit for what it did accomplish.
Well, and my thing is, even going back to, like, the Persona 2 games, like, there were characters that would, like, flirt with members of the same gender, and it was not played as a joke like Persona 5 does, where, like, gay people are represented as, like, skeevy connivers who are, like, attempting to manipulate people into compromising situations. It's a little gross.
Yeah, it sucks, and I've also heard some people in the LGBT community be like, it's not that bad, so I don't know. It's tough for me because I've put in about 10 or so hours into Persona 5, which is like, you know, just barely scratching the surface.
I also know gay people who say that the way that Russia treats its gay citizens is none of our business. A lot of people say a lot of things. I ain't got to agree with them.
Oh, no, no. I'm not trying to change your mind or anything. I'm just saying it's tough for me because what I've seen of Persona 5 so far, and I mean, what I've played, I've really enjoyed. So it's kind of like, am I going to go back to it and just kind of swallow that jagged little pill? Or, I mean, do I just not even give it a chance? So, but I do have to say, ever since I kind of heard more about what the problematic stuff was, I haven't gone back to Persona 5, but also...
Well, that's actually part of why I'm so mad about it, is I have, every time I've had a little bit of gaming time in front of my TV, it's like, well, I could play Persona 5, and if I get to that point in the game, just be mad for the night, or I could just play a different game. And so I have been consistently just playing other games.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You were going to say?
Oh, no, it's just that, you know, it just really raises an interesting point of, you know, when developers... I mean, because, you know, we've had things like... the Tomodachi Life with the an error in the way that characters were interacting. We had some controversy with GamerGator doing the voice in Project Steam and stuff. And, you know, people remember Nintendo was getting a lot of boycotting just, you know, a couple years back. So it's kind of interesting just to think about, can we accept you know, when things are problematic and look past the problematic parts and, you know, still identify what's good. But I mean,
you know, something else I want to talk about briefly too, and, you know, maybe you're listening to this and you're about to tweet at us, you know, LGBT representation is different in Japan. It's inappropriate for us to assume that, you know, Japanese representations are going to be up to our standards. So let me be clear. I'm already looking at it from that perspective. All I want is for the game not to actively shit on marginalized people. We're talking about a game where literally the fundamental, like, theme of the game is, like, resisting societal expectation and conformity, like, acknowledging that, like, the attitudes and beliefs that have been placed in us institutionally are not always right and do need to be questioned. And to me, if you're making a game like that, then to then represent marginalized people that I think everyone can agree are marginalized, particularly in Japanese society, the least you can do is not shit on them.
Yeah.
That having been said, you may disagree, and that's fine too. I just think if you're going to make a game about being punk rock and thinking for yourself and, you know, resisting out-of-date ideas, probably presenting LGBT characters that way isn't a great way
to do
that.
Yeah, it seems like I'm really surprised, especially now that I see how those themes are carried out in the game, that this would have been a great opportunity for full-on, like, you know, having a romanceable...
Same-sex character
that... you could have romanced a cutie boy, because, you know, your character is presumably a cisgender male.
Yeah, and, you know, I've heard people say this is a set character. They are meant to be heterosexual. But if you're going to have, like, dating sim type aspects and, you know, changing relationships, why would it be a bad thing to let you have agency over your character's orientation?
Yosuke was almost going to be gay, right? And there was even some dialogue recorded?
That is supposedly, yeah. That's always what they've said and what I've read.
I mean, although I would have rather romanced Kanji if Brosuke was the only gay character that I could have romanced in Persona 4, I would have gone for it.
And you know, the funny thing for me is if there had been positive representations of LGBT folks, this would probably not have bothered me. If it was meant to be like one facet and it's meant to look at like different people within communities behaving differently and, you know, fitting in with that theme of resisting expectation and being yourself, and they use that as like to make a point of like some people who are different, you know, they're not automatically right for being different. I feel like there are actually ways they could have worked that in that probably still would have been messy and problematic, but at least would have had like an excuse to be like that rather than to just randomly shit on people and make their identity a joke.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to really be interesting to see how over the next couple of years the community reacts to Atlas, really, because I think a lot of people are not super happy with them for the streaming stuff as well, to take it back to our news.
Absolutely. All right, well then, moving forward here, we have word of the first set of DLC characters for the upcoming DC Fighter Injustice 2.
People, wait, that's a game people are going to buy?
You know, I actually think that Injustice 2 is going to ultimately be a better selling game than Street Fighter 5.
Oh!
Clock it. I'm telling you, man. Clock it, book it, let's review it next year. Until then, though, you can look forward to playing as Starfire, Red Hood, and the first announced guest character, Mortal Kombat's Sub-Zero. This will be available sometime after the game launches, and if you are purchasing the Digital Deluxe or Ultimate Edition, this DLC is included in the Season Pass for that.
And last but not least, in other fighter news, we have some more characters revealed for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite via a really great trailer that was put up at the end of April. It shows Chris Redfield, Chun-Li, Hawkeye, Hulk, Strider Hiryu, Thor, and Ultron.
Excellent. You know, I watch that gameplay trailer several times. I think the game looks fantastic from a mechanics standpoint. The aesthetic looks a little off to me, but obviously, you know, there's still, what, 6 months to, less actually, because actually going to be releasing September 19th. Hopefully, by September 19th, they'll have the game all polished and looking perfect. Something I'm really looking forward to.
I mean, I feel like that wasn't that the case with Street Fighter V, where people were like, ooh.
And four, yeah.
And four ended up being quite a treat for the eyes, I thought.
I thought so, too. We did also learn a little bit more about some upcoming DLC for that game. There's apparently, in 2017, going to be 6 DLC characters. The deluxe edition of Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite comes with the 2017 character pass. The first DLC character is going to be Sigma. This is, of course, the well-known villain from the Mega Man X series. We do not yet know anything else, but a lot of people are assuming, with the game releasing in September, that we'll be getting monthly character downloads, probably 2 each month, presumably 1 Marvel and 1 Capcom.
That would make sense. And I've got to ask,
strike again.
Have they ever made a Sigma Figma?
I don't believe that they have. You asshole. We have word here that Gundam Versus, the upcoming super fancy reimagination of the well-loved Gundam Versus series, will be coming west this fall for PlayStation 4. This is, of course, exciting. The Gundam Versus series has gained a following here in North America. As we've discussed just what last month, this game is massive in Japan. Really excited that we're going to be getting this here, and I hope that the online Versus will be cross-region so that we can play against our friends in Japan. We also have word that Shin Yomiwari will be headed westward as Yomiwari Midnight Shadows this fall for PlayStation 4, PlayStation Vita, and Steam. We also have word that Bonk's Revenge recently joined the Virtual Console lineup on
There's your Bonk game.
Son of a bitch. This is, of course, another TurboGrafx-16 game. If y'all out there are listening to this and are as mad as I am that all of the TurboGrafx-16 games are hitting long after the Wii U ceased to be relevant, join me in raising your fist and shaking it while shouting like an old man. Thumper is getting a Nintendo Switch release on May 18th. This is, of course, the extremely pretty rhythm shoot-em-up game. Apparently, it's going to be running locked at 60 frames a second on both handheld mode and TV mode. For this game, that is important. Garou, Mark of the Wolves. This is, of course, the Neo Geo fighting game that many people think is the best fighting game that SNK ever designed, will be releasing on the Nintendo Switch on May 11th.
Getting those Neo Geo classics.
Right? And last, but definitely not least, we have word that Loco Roco Remastered will be releasing on PS4 in Japan on June 22nd.
Aww.
Super cute game, super fun game.
Was that PSP or Vita?
That was a PSP game.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, a big fan of this game, and we'll actually be getting the release later this month, so please look forward
Woo-hoo.
To it. With all that having been said, it's time for some news.
News. Oh my god. News.
All right. The first piece of news that we have here is word that Koei Tecmo will be releasing a new iteration of the Nobunaga's Ambition series. This is, of course, a big deal. This is one of Koei Tecmo's longest-running series, going all the way back to the Famicom days or earlier. It's going to be releasing on the PS4, Nintendo Switch, and PC in Japan, according to the most recent issue of Famitsu Magazine. The title of the game is, of course, Nobunaga's Ambition Taishi. Sagi, what do you think about this one?
That's cool. I mean, I've never really played any of these games, but I'm sure that it's going to be a success in Japan, and that Switch is a good decision for that.
Excellent.
The smartphone RPG Eglia is coming west this summer. It is made by Brownies, who you would probably recognize most famously for Mother 3, as well as several games in the Seiken Densetsu series.
Previously known as Brownie Brown.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a drag queen name. Nina Bonina Brownie Brown. So Eglia involves collecting eggs that you get from accepting quests and advancing through the story, using the eggs to unlock new areas in the world map by reviving a part of the world that was sealed.
It also has some, like, proto-dating sim elements.
That's cute.
Where you can, like, level up your love levels in order to increase your relationship to various NPCs. All in all, it looks like a really cute and fun game. I'm really looking forward to this, coming out in North America.
But on a disappointing note, appears to have no connection to Eggmania.
Well, boo. Coming out of Koei Tecmo, we also have word that they are going to be releasing their first news on Dynasty Warriors 9 on May 11th.
Yeah, that's exciting because, you know, they were talking about that it's going to be, like, really open world and everything. So that should be an interesting to see how it pans out for this style of game.
Indeed. I'm really, really looking forward to some more news on that.
And Paladins is now in open beta for PS4 and Xbox One. It's kind of Overwatch-y from what I've seen of it, but, you know, I guess a little friendly competition never hurt anything.
Yeah, you know, unlike Battleborn, I, you know, actually think that this game is one of those ones that might do enough things a little differently that it can coexist with Overwatch. Has kind of like a almost like card-based ability system going on, which is, I think, very interesting. I don't know. I'm digging the idea. I haven't played it yet. I've watched a lot of videos, but I've downloaded it and hope to get to it pretty quick.
Yeah, and this is a free-to-play, and then you purchase characters sort of thing, right? Sort of like a MOBA style in terms of, like, you know, characters being on a rotation, I would assume.
Yeah, and there is a Founders Pack available for download, which unlocks all of the characters and will unlock all characters that are ever added for the life of the game, and that's available as a $20 purchase.
That's not bad if it ends up being fun.
Right? If it ends up being fun, like, okay, I'm paying $20 for a game I like, and that's that.
Cool. Well, we'll have to check it out, probably on PS4, because who turns on their Xbox One anymore?
People who have 4K Blu-rays?
Cool.
So we also have some news here from the Culture Club. This is, of course, where we talk about news stories.
What's Boy George doing now?
Someday I'm going to stop you from making that joke. That day is not today. This is, of course, where we look at what's going on in the gaming world. A little less about the games themselves and more about the people around them. Slaggy, do you want to get us started here?
Yeah, so this is a kind of cray-cray one. So it involves the Twitch streamer Ice Poseidon.
Also known as Paul De Nino.
Yes, and so he was doing this thing, I guess on Twitch they've got an IRL section which kind of just shows you doing your stuff. And so basically he got swatted while on an airplane, and then Twitch banned him. And so he's kind of, I had not really followed him. I'm kind of new to the whole Twitch and streaming world, which is, it's quite a interesting, you know, whole like community of gaming like that I've never really engaged with before. But you know, this is apparently not the first time that he's gotten a slap on the hand from Twitch, and he got swatted in his apartment apparently, and people come and prank him, and you know, he was giving out where his location was. So it's just kind of crazy. I mean, you know, this is definitely not the first case of, you know, swatting being involved in, you know, Twitch streaming or just even with, you know, the gaming community. But just kind of seeing how Twitch has handled it, a lot of people think that they're being unfair. And apparently now he has met with YouTube, and YouTube is kind of taking him on. So,
well, I hope that goes well for him. You know, it's always tricky when you know, some of these personalities present themselves as provocateur, and then, you know, the shtick goes a little too far, and, you know, they're kind of left holding the shit.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, sucks for him, of course. I don't think that this kind of thing should be happening to anyone. Just the whole culture around swatting is, it's just too much. Like, what the hell, guys? We also have word here, though, and this is a little more exciting. Ben Heckendorn, who you probably know as Ben Heck, well known for creating, like, portable versions of various hardware that is not meant to be portable. He has actually taken it upon himself to restore the prototype Sony PlayStation Nintendo version.
That is so cool.
Yeah, right? You may, of course, recall the PlayStation started its life as a Super Nintendo CD-ROM. Last year, I believe we talked about how the prototype for one of the prototypes for it had been found, did not appear to work. But he is basically gone in and worked on this thing and gotten it to the point where it can run audio CDs, it can play CD-ROM games. You know, as far as can be told, it appears to now be a fully functioning Nintendo PlayStation.
Yeah, that's just so cool that, you know, this little piece of gaming history is able to live.
Yeah, absolutely. We also have word from some hackers of a different sort. You may recall we've talked here about how Nintendo's 3DS metadata server was very easy to exploit in order to get news on unannounced games that are already sitting on their servers. That's actually how we first found out about Twilight Princess HD. They have now spotted a file in the 3DS file database for Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga Deluxe. So, you know, a lot of people have been expecting a Nintendo Direct in March. Kind of sounds like we might get one with a new Mario and Luigi, well, a new old Mario and Luigi game announcement.
That would be really cool.
Indeed.
Germany has finally gotten an uncensored version of Half-Life.
What?
Well, apparently, I never really knew this until reading this article, but back in 1998, when Germany got Half-Life, they changed the Marines to robots, and then instead of dying horribly, the scientists would just sit down and be sad, according to Kotaku.
Well, and you know, this actually totally tracks with stuff like the Contra games. They didn't used to release in Europe as Contra. They were called Probotector, and they actually had very similar modifications made with robots that would sometimes blow up and sometimes just shut down and sit down. So this is really strangely a thing that happens, but I think it's really cool that they're finally getting this game update. I think that for people who still care to play Half-Life in 2017,
and hey,
at least if you're in Germany, there are people play the game now. Oh yeah, no, there are tons of people. I mean, we probably have people who listen to this that still replay Half-Life. Half-Life every year. We also have word that Reddit user Chemist49 found a very strange disc in a box of Blizzard stuff he purchased on eBay. It was a CDR that apparently contained the StarCraft Gold master source code. This is, of course, a big deal. Anytime a game's source code leaks to the public, that's kind of a big deal. He posted on Reddit, this user did, about what should he do. A lot of people, of course, wanted him to rip the contents of the disc, rip it and, you know, put it up online for free, basically, you know, free the information to everybody. But basically, someone from Blizzard reached out to him and was like, hey, could you please send that back to us? And he did. This is a happy story. Blizzard ended up sending him a swag box with several hundred dollars worth of gear. High-end keyboards, high-end mouse, limited edition plushies and figures, and then gave him an all-expense-paid trip to BlizzCon.
And said, let's have drinks together.
Right? So, basically here we have word of someone, you know, finding something they shouldn't have had. He did the right thing with it and, you know, got rewarded.
Yeah, and that Razer Overwatch gear is sexy.
Yes, you know, that's actually what I use. Like, my computer I'm at right now has those.
Well, you don't have the Overwatch edition, but yeah, your Chroma is very nice.
Bitch! It doesn't have an Overwatch logo on it.
All right, well, move on to our next one.
This one is a very sad one. We have news that David Ally DeHance, who was a professional Smite player, has passed away at the age of 25 after battling cancer. And so he's actually also had been well known as a Smash Brothers and StarCraft 2 player, and then got really into playing Smite. And so he kept playing until the end. So a lot of, you know, people in the Smite community and just in the Smash and StarCraft 2 communities are kind of just saluting him. So we hope that anyone whose life he was a part of, our thoughts are with you, and just very sad to hear someone who's, you know, very celebrated in the gaming community, losing that battle. So,
our hearts and thoughts go out to your loved ones. Rest in peace. And I'm just, this totally sucks. That is just, it's too young. Fuck cancer, man.
Yeah.
In other news, Alexander Brandon, who is probably best known for his composition work on Deus Ex and Unreal, is currently working with Retro Studios on an unannounced project he can't talk about per a post on his Facebook. So that's a little bit of
brighter
news.
Oh, he's just composing the new DK rap.
Yeah, funny. Very exciting news, though. Very, very cool stuff. I know that Mr. Brandon has previously talked about his love for the Metroid series, so fingers crossed that Prime 4 could be coming.
Maybe on a device called the Nintendo Switch. You never know.
You never know. All right, well, all that having been said, let's have our discussion to the degree that we have a discussion this week. We picked out a handful of news stories we wanted to dive a little deeper into. This whole episode has basically been us deep diving into news stories, though, so it's basically just five or six news stories that aren't sitting with the rest of them. Bum, bum. So let's start this off. The first one I wanted to talk about is word that at its launch in North America, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which of course just released last week, April 28th, had, in that first weekend of release, sold over 459,000 copies. That includes both digital and physical copies and shows an attach rate in North America of over 45%.
That's crazy.
Over 45% of North American Switch owners bought Mario Kart 8 Deluxe in its first weekend.
And that's more than Kart Wii did, which, funny enough, was released on, like, right around the same time 9 years ago.
Indeed. This is, in fact, the best first week numbers that any Mario Kart game has ever sold. Of course, a lot of people now are wondering if the Switch does have a normal console life cycle, if we won't see Mario Kart 8 Deluxe numbers someday approach the numbers of Mario Kart Wii, which you may recall is currently sitting pretty with over 36 million units sold.
That game did so well on the Wii. And so, I mean, it's funny because people are like, oh, Mario Kart 8 DX, it's just Mario Kart 8. They added battle mode back and have all the DLC stuff. But, I mean, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is great. Mario Kart 8 was already a great game. But 8 Deluxe is just fantastic. And I think a lot of people sometimes forget that Mario Kart is huge. Mario Kart games are arguably more popular than the mainline Mario games.
I don't even think it's arguable, really. I mean, what other games sell 36 million? And still, every year in the earnings reports, that number goes up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Mario Kart Wii
appears to be selling a couple hundred thousand a year.
And the thing that's so funny is that I think that Mario Kart Wii is one of the weaker games in the series.
I do, too.
Aside from Super Circuit, which was kind of the poop game.
Yeah, which, funny enough, was also a pretty good seller. But, you know, I think the thing with Mario Kart Wii, lots of people bought Wiis, and Mario Kart is a lot of fun for casual gamers. And I don't mean that casual. I explain this every time I use that word.
Right.
I do not mean it in a derogative way. I simply mean,
Very accessible game.
It's accessible, yes.
But still, people who are, you know, more into, you know, a challenge or a little more hardcore can still, like, people like you can still have a lot of fun with it. And, you know, this one is arguably even more accessible. It has the auto-accelerate and auto-steering. I wish I had actually thought to link this for our Culture Club. Did you hear about, there is a guy who was talking about his daughter, I think she has cerebral palsy or something, where she only really has use of one of her hands, but because of the new features in Kart 8 Deluxe, she can either have auto steering or auto accelerate on, and then just use a Joy-Con to, you know, focus on the other one, and she's able to play and enjoy with her older siblings. I thought that was, like,
incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I don't even know if Nintendo thought of it for, you know, in terms of accessibility for, you know, persons with disabilities, but I think that is incredible. I think she's also, like, 4 years old or something. So, like, hell yes, little 4-year-old girl, right? Who's able to enjoy this game. And I think this is just really good news for the Switch. I'm glad that more people are able to experience this game, because Kart 8, Kart 8 Deluxe, I think is the best of the series. It's fantastic. The tracks are all great, and the way that they updated some of the tracks make it so that even, like, the Super Circuit tracks are actually, like, really well done.
I'm really excited about this, because this, to me, says a lot of things. The first, of course, is that people are buying the Switch, and they're buying Switch games, which obviously goes over incredibly well.
I feel like right at the start, people were a little worried that, oh, if it weren't for Zelda, but, you know, now that we're starting to see the games coming out, and we've got ARMS and Splatoon 2 coming in just a couple months, it's good, really good sign.
A little further down the line, we have Fire Emblem Warriors, we have Mario Odyssey, we have Xenoblade 2. I've seen a lot of enthusiasts on places like GAF, and I'm a big fan of GAF. I'm a GAF or whatever. I've seen a lot of people on enthusiast sites talking about Nintendo Switch having a weak launch, but I'm like, dude, I don't think any console ever has had a year one like the Switch is primed up to have. We're 60 days in, and we have, like, the best Zelda game of all time, the best Mario Kart game of all time.
And, you know, I think this
a whole slew of amazing indies, already very deep library of Neo Geo games, many of which I think are some of the best arcade games ever designed. Like,
I think this
that's
also
a pretty great year one.
Really bodes well for remastered one. Wii U games coming.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
I'm really hoping that we're going to get a Smash, you know, Smash 4, but just for Switch.
Going to get Smash 4 Switch, it's a port of Wii U and all that. I think we'll hear something about that by E3. To me, if we don't hear about it by then, we're probably just not going to get a Smash until we get Smash 5 sometime down the line. I hope it doesn't come to that, though, because I love Smash, and I'm really ready to play it on my Switch.
Yeah, and Smash 4 really is, like, I mean, at this point, like, I think it's the best version of
the Kart 8 of the Smash series to me.
I mean, so, like, I feel like they could, hey, if Street Fighter can have a million different versions, why can't Smash do it too? And then
I'm hoping for both Kart 8 and Smash. I hope Smash gets a Smash Deluxe release or whatever, and I hope they both just get DLC support. I don't think the Nintendo Switch will need another Mario Kart if 8 Deluxe just gets DLC tracks, you know, 6 months from now to keep it fresh.
I mean, that's the
and
thing.
I think think the same about Smash. I think that it would free up those teams to do other projects, take a little bit of a break from doing these iterative sequels.
And then we get things like ARMS.
Right? Exactly. Free those minds up to work with new ideas and new IP.
Splatoon.
You know, to reinvigorate other brands that maybe need a revival. And, you know, let this generation be on these pinnacle versions of the game, then come back to these franchises with a fresh start with an eventual Switch 2.
Yeah.
So that's my hope. These numbers, to me, if you're already selling these kinds of numbers, I think Nintendo's best bet, from their perspective too, is probably to really keep Kart 8 Deluxe as their evergreen Kart title. To me, that's the business plan. It tracks with what they've always done. I think it's certainly the maximum reward for a very tiny, tiny, tiny amount of risk. They've already overcome the risk. I mean, this game's profitable. It's gotta be. I could not believe this game isn't profitable.
What else do you think, before we move on, what else do you think would be a good fit besides Smash Deluxe?
I would love... For porting generally, or as an evergreen title?
Well, specifically Wii U titles getting a second chance at life on the Switch.
You know, I know that Wonderful 101 is a common one for people to say. I don't agree there. I think that Wonderful 101 sort of lives or dies by that, you know, drawing your shapes on your touchscreen feature. But I think Bayonetta 1 and 2 would be a fantastic port.
Oh boy.
Lock it at 60 frames a second and you're golden, dude. But the other big one would really be Super Mario Cats or Super Mario 3D World. That's a game that I think would play really well with the Play Anywhere functionality, the Multiplayer Anywhere functionality, except the part of me that's kind of greedy and selfish just wants a Super Mario Land or Super Mario 3D World 2 so that I can get new content.
How do you think...
Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker, but I think that goes without saying.
What do you think about the possibility of Mario Maker? Would it work on the Switch?
Would it work? Yes. Do I want to play that game not on a touchscreen? Less so. I just found that touchscreen interface super intuitive.
Well, I mean, it does have a touchscreen.
Yeah, but in portable mode only, so I can only build courses when I'm on the go? That doesn't sound good to me.
Not on the go. You can sit on your couch.
Girl. When I said on the go, I meant in handheld mode.
Yeah. So.
Then again, I guess there's nothing saying that you couldn't do, you know, touchscreen mode active in handheld mode, and otherwise, you know, pull up a grid and you're using your controller, just click, 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 or whatever. Not my ideal, but I guess it's possible. It just seems a little less likely to me since it just got that 3DS port in December.
Yeah. Well, speaking of 3DS...
Yeah, this is something I think none of us expected. On April 27th, we got the announcement of the new Nintendo 2DS XL. And this is what appears to be the ultimate in the 3DS line. Sai, why don't you talk about the 2DS XL?
So the 2DS XL, unlike the 2DS, which is kind of, you know, looks like a glorified Tiger Electronics handheld, this is a, you know...
A sickening looking.
Yeah, it looks basically like a, you know, very polished version of the 3DS XL. Sorry, the new Nintendo 3DS XL. And it is basically a new Nintendo 3DS XL without the 3D. So, you know, as a result, the screen is a lot, because they don't have to have that 3D screen, it's able, I guess, prettier. I don't know the exact screen mechanic details. You're more of, able to speak on that sort of information, but you know, it's a very sleek piece of hardware, and I hate that I
you can
kind
call
of
it
want
sexy
one.
I won't judge you.
I kind of hate that I want one because I already have way too many 3DSs, but I mean, I don't know, has it stopped me yet?
No, I feel pretty certain that if nothing else, come December, you're going to be like, oh, hey, I got a 2DS XL, or I got a bunch of GameStop gift cards. Want to come with me as I get a 2DS XL?
My thing is that I've talked about this before. I can't do the 3D. Like, I'm one of those weird people who, like, it gives me headaches and stuff. So
I don't really think that's that weird. I actually think a lot of people feel that way now that we've sort of had the 3D gimmick out there for a while. I've actually heard that from a lot of people.
And so to just like not even have to, I mean, it's the thing is that I have a new 3DS, I have a new 3DS XL, I have a 3DS XL Zelda, I used to have another 3DS XL. No, actually, I have two 3DS XLs. One is a Zelda, one is just a
so basically
blue one.
You have a bunch of these,
and then
things,
I had a 3DS.
You feel like you need another.
My original 3DS, I would still have, but I Gave that to Dark Sakura to help her get into the 3DS world.
Oh, Dark Sakura over from Orange Orange Radio.
Yeah, yeah. She gave me some eShop cards.
Awesome.
As an exchange. So, yes.
Awesome.
So, yeah, the thing is I do not need this, but...
But you want it.
Yeah, and I'm like I was saying, the screen is actually going to be a better screen, right?
That is my understanding, yeah.
So this comes out on July 28th, which is the same day that Hey Pikmin and Miitopia are launching
yes.
over here.
And In Japan, it'll be July 13th.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the thing that is really interesting about this is that as we were expecting the 3DS to die out, here comes the 2DS XL.
Yeah, and you know, that actually does, I sort of want to ask you, who do you think this is being marketed to?
I've seen
a lot of theories online, people talking about, you know, oh, this is clearly targeted at millennials, what is Nintendo doing? That's the target audience for the Switch. But then, you know, I've seen some people saying, you know, we have a Dragon Quest XI coming, and in fact, there is already a Dragon Quest XI 2DS XL announced, which looks gorgeous, very similar to the Lodo edition PS4. It's kind of metal slime themed like that one
yeah.
is. But this one, rather than being blue and gold, is black and silver. I think it looks awesome. I think it's an incredibly gorgeous console, and if this ever makes it to North America, I will absolutely be buying one.
I kind of feel like what I really need to do is just wait until, because the thing that always got me with the 3DS is which I'm glad that the Joy-Con seems to be the way that you can customize the Switch much cheaper, is that whenever there'd be a sexy new limited edition, I'd be like, I want that, you know? So I feel like that's where I'm going to have to be with the new Nintendo 2DS XL, that once they have one announced that, you know, is a cool art, it's a shame that the faceplates and the regular new 3DS, the little guy, the faceplates never really took off over here.
Yeah. Well, I will say, in my time in Japan, I didn't see a whole lot of those either. And I was looking for them because I wanted to grab one for you, but either they get snapped up as soon as they hit shelves, or not that popular there either.
So I'm curious if I would imagine this is a lot cheaper to produce for them, right? Because it doesn't have the 3D stuff.
I would have to assume, you know, those 3D parallax screens or whatever that allowed that glasses-free 3D effect to happen. They're not made by many manufacturers. I believe it might just be Sharp. So, you know, obviously being freed from that and using a more standard screen will be
cheaper.
I mean,
I feel like this
is supposed to be a higher quality screen with a wider viewing angle. So, you know, it's also going to be a superior product. So,
I mean, I feel like as Switch continues to pick up momentum, that this is going to be their main, they're going to start to phase out the other 3DSs. And
oh, I definitely agree there. To me, I kind of think that this goal is probably going to be more to like kids and families.
The trailer, though, does show a lot of millennials.
Well, and, you know, but some of those millennials, it seemed, were dressed in like high school clothes and like high school student uniforms. So I think we were sort of meant to read it as, you know, people of like all ages. That was certainly how it hit me. I also think it's going to be, you know, for people who do want to play things like Ever Oasis and Dragon Quest, you know, maybe you already traded in your 3DS, or, you know, you just want a new one to play some of these new last great games, the new Kirby multiplayer game that's going to be coming out later this year. You know, if you need to pick up a 3DS, why not just pick up a 2DS?
Yeah, because especially with the 3D kind of, in the end,
a lot of games not even supporting it.
Like Pokemon, like specifically, you know, made accessible for, you know, not having 3D and stuff. And I feel like even things like A Link Between Worlds, like, they really toned down what they did with the 3D, because, like, originally the 3D wasn't supposed to be, like, much more a part of, like, the puzzle solving.
Yes.
And wasn't it Miyamoto who said, no, change that. So it's kind of interesting to see.
Probably. Like, that's kind of what he does.
It's almost kind of that I would not say the 3DS was a failure, but
I don't think any console, handheld or otherwise, that moves that many million units can be called a failure outright.
But it's interesting to see that its original gimmick is kind of what ended up not being really what was essential to it. Really what helped the 3DS was its fantastic library of games.
Indeed, and that's, I think, why Nintendo is taking the tech they are with the Switch and really just loading it up with software from day one and keeping the focus on bam, 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 rapid-fire content support.
So, I mean, it will be interesting to see if we get a 2DS 2 or, you know, a DS 3 or...
You know, I still think that the 3DS brand is sort of on life support. I think if the Switch really does take off, then that's their pillar. If the Switch, you know, somehow crashes and burns from where we are now, which seems unlikely, but always remains a possibility. You never know how the market will turn.
I mean, my one thing is that people are always going to come back to battery life.
People are always going to come back to it, but let's keep in mind, the Switch basically has the same battery life that the first iteration of the 3DS had.
The first 3DS only had like a 3-hour battery life?
Yeah. You might not have noticed because you didn't really play with 3D on, but if you had 3D on, yeah, you'd get about 3 hours out of that thing, sometimes less.
Really?
Yeah.
I almost wonder if we're going to continue to see 3DS, 2DS until Switch 2 comes with a improved battery life.
Well, you know, we'll see on that. I just, it's so weird to me that the battery life issue is such a thing when in 2017, I feel like most of us that are like tech gimmick focused
get
literally
portable,
carry portable batteries with us everywhere now.
Yeah.
I mean, I know very few people who don't at this point. So, and obviously that also speaks to myself and my community, but within my sphere of experience, most people carry batteries for these things, and that's just the beginning and end.
And I mean, like, you know, I could almost, I wouldn't be surprised. Nintendo doesn't have an official one, do they?
You know, they do not. Although, who knows?
Just make it a little Mario mushroom or a Pokeball, and there you go.
Dude, who wouldn't buy a Pokeball portable battery that was an official licensed product?
Right.
I know a bunch of people who have unofficial ones.
Right?
All right, well, let's move on to this next news story. This is word that Sony's E3 2017 press conference is going to be taking place on June 12th at their now usual time of 6 o'clock p.m.
Oh.
Yeah. This is, of course, very exciting stuff. I haven't heard anything yet about, like, an E3 experience theatrical event. We will keep you posted if we do. But what I wanted to ask you, Slaggy, is what are you hoping to see from Sony?
I don't know. Because I know that they're going to be talking about Last of Us 2 and God of War and stuff. And so I think the themes that usually excite me most about Sony are the themes that I'm not expecting. So
the surprises.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting because I am going to be, I mean, hopefully I'll be back in town by the time that this starts, but I'm going to be kind of during that pre-3 time, I'm going to actually be down in Disneyland. So,
Oh, wow. So during the Microsoft presser, the Bethesda presser, the EA presser.
Yeah, I'll probably be eating a Dole Whip.
Well, I dare say you're going to be having a better time than I am. For me, I'm hoping to get more information from Square Enix about their games that are on the PlayStation family of consoles. I'd love updates on Final Fantasy VII R. I'd love an update on Kingdom Hearts 3. If there are any other Final Fantasy or Kingdom Hearts games in the pipeline that we don't know about, I would love to hear about those. I'm easy to please. All right, well then let's move on to the surprise announcement last week of Darksiders 3. Darksiders 3, of course, being developed by Gunfire Games, published by THQ Nordic. Gunfire Games is largely made up of Vigil Games staff. Vigil Games, of course, was the developer behind Darksiders and Darksiders 2. So, really exciting stuff. A lot of the same people involved in the earlier games still involved, which I think a lot of us didn't expect able to happen.
I don't think any of us... I think we all thought that Darksiders 2 was going to be the end. After the THQ,
THQ kerfuffle. But nope, we have Darksiders 3 coming up. We have an official reveal trailer per IGN First. This game is going to be focusing on Fury,
who is imagined as a badass
battle woman. I think that her design looks super rad. I think that the game setting and everything looks really cool. I'm really excited about this game. I was a big fan of the other two Darksiders games.
Yeah, Darksiders 2 was really good.
Yeah, I thought so. What do you think, Slaggy?
It's just two things. First of all, you know, when THQ died, Darksiders was one of the franchises that we were both talking about how bummed we were to see that that was probably not going to, especially remember we when they were selling all their property, we were like, who's going to snatch up Darksiders? And kind of no one really did. Or, you know, it didn't seem like there was going to be much of a future for it. And now here's Darksiders 3. I wish there was a Switch.
For all the world, like a big AAA game.
I wish there was a Switch announcement, but hey, I will take more Darksiders. I thought that, like I said, Darksiders 2 in particular did a lot of things really great. A lot of fun to play. And, you know, Death was really a really cool character. And yeah, it's just it's interesting. The other thing, the other point I want to make is just seeing how THQ is kind of coming back. You know, we have Nordic adopting the THQ name so that its legacy can live on. So it's a good time for THQ.
Yeah, and you know, I do just want to briefly touch on the lack of a Switch announcement for this game. That's really interesting to me, and not just as a Nintendo fan, but you know, Darksiders 2 was so popular on the Wii U and sold so many units,
yeah,
that they are still bringing the Darksiders 1 remaster to Wii U later this month.
That's right.
And to me, that speaks, because a lot of us are like, why would you even bother with that game in 2017 porting to the Wii U? But they're still doing it because the second game was that popular on that console. And that does make me wonder why they're not trying to make a Switch version work. But Darksiders 3 is a game that,
hey, maybe we'll get,
I'm excited enough about to pick up on PS4, Xbox One.
Hey, maybe we'll get Darksiders 1, 2, and 3 for Switch.
Aw, dude, I would love that. Well, let's talk about our last news story here and start winding the show down.
This I'm just going to say, though, that means that we'll probably have a Darksiders 4 to close out the chapter.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we're closer than we are far. So this is the official announcement of the contents of the first batch of Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild DLC. Let me ask you, you know, we talked already about Zelda getting the DLC expansion pass. It's a $20 purchase that has, you know, multiple packs of DLC. A lot of controversy that this was announced before Zelda was properly released. I did buy the expansion pass. Did you?
I have not yet, but I mean, it's inevitable.
Okay. So we may actually have different points of view on this.
It was only just because I just was trying to be a little more frugal at the time.
Okay. The first piece of this DLC, and probably the biggest, is the Master Trials, which is the Trial of the Sword. This is a new location with 45 rooms, each of which has been roughly compared to being the size of a shrine. So this is almost like getting 45 new shrines. Some of the rooms are going to be combat. Link will have no equipment when he enters the trials, and will have to continue to defeat enemies, loot them, and solve puzzles in order to proceed.
I love this concept.
And apparently, completing the Cave of Trials challenge will end up upgrading the Master Sword to be permanently powered up, and not just while you're in Ganon's castle.
So hyped for that.
Super hyped for
that. I love this concept. In some ways, it reminds me of Deep Dungeon in Final Fantasy XIV, where, you know, it's a different alternate sort of progression.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, like, I think, like, you know, like I said, the shrines were so great. Like, I loved that way of implementing puzzles.
Shrines are my favorite.
And I mean, the thing is that I loved that, you know, the shrines were kind of differentiated from the divine beasts, you know, and we talked about that. So I'm really excited to see what sorts of puzzles come into play. And, you know, I would be okay with just more shrines and stuff in the future DLC or whatever.
Oh, totally. And we know there's going to be a new dungeon in the future DLC as well.
Ooh.
Right? So one of the other parts of this DLC is the hard mode, which we knew was coming. Hard mode is going to feature enemies that are all like one stage stronger than they are in the normal mode at that point in the game. As well as that, enemies are going to be more likely to attack you in, like, larger radiuses rather than them being quite as easy to sneak by. They will all be able to also gradually regenerate their health And in addition, there are going to be new floating platforms throughout the world in this mode that will allow, you know, well, sometimes they'll have treasures, but more often they're going to have enemies up there flying on floating platforms just waiting for you to fly by defenseless on your glider. I think that in particular is actually like super exciting. I don't know how y'all played this game, and I will let you make your joke, but I don't know how y'all played this game, but for me, a lot of it was like, find my objective, find the tallest peak near it, and then just glide over to it.
Oh, yeah.
And how much is it going to suck to glide by a floating platform with some bow goblins and be like, well, I'm about to get knocked down and fall 500 feet to my death?
Right, and just in the footage we've seen, in the images we've seen, just the little platforms with the Octorok balloons, like, they just look... Something about it just looks so silly to me.
Oh, gosh. So silly and adorable. Was that your comment?
Yes, yes.
Excellent. Dude, what's going to happen if you're flying in the air and you're in, like, one of the end game areas and there's, like, a Lynel up there?
Oh,
how
what
awful
if...
will that be?
What if there's a Guardian?
Aw, dude, could you imagine? let's see. So we
But hey, like, that'll be motivation to go and finish off those shrines, get some more heart pieces.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is true. We're also going to see the addition of a functionality called the Hero's Path. And what that is going to do, and it will be available retroactively, is that it will actually let you see the paths that you've taken, your character has taken, over the last 200 hours of gameplay. So you'll be able to look at the map and see on the map, like, where you have and have not been.
That's really helpful.
That's going to be super helpful. You're also going to be getting a travel medallion, which will be hidden somewhere in the world, we do not yet know where, that will allow you to create temporary travel points wherever you currently are so that you can fast travel somewhere else and then come right back to your current location. There's also going to be some new equipment, including a full Tingle costume, Phantom Knight costume, a Midna mask, Majora's mask, and a Korok mask that will help you find Korok challenges. All in all, this sounds like a pretty beefy set of DLC. What do you think, Slaggy?
I'm really excited for it, and especially knowing that more is going to come, especially, you know, the later in the year is promising to be more of story-based, so this will definitely give me a reason to go back and pick the game up again and, you know, go find, especially with the Hero's Path, go find some of those shrines that I couldn't track down. Because there's nothing worse than when you're going, you know, and the shrine radar's going off and you're like, where is it? Where is it?
Aw, dude, right?
I love the new outfits. And something else that is available now that is kind of, not part of the DLC, but it's just, it was announced along with it, is that you can change the in-game audio. So a lot of people are really excited that you can have English subtitles with the Japanese voice acting, which apparently is top-notch.
Does not surprise me.
Apparently the Spanish language voice acting is really well done, too.
I have heard that. The Master Trials add-on will be arriving this summer. The second add-on pack will be arriving in holiday 2017.
Fantastic.
With all of this having been said, let's start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So this week, I have been playing Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Fantastic game, fantastic version of a fantastic game. Having a lot of fun. Did some online play with Rob Roberts of Orange Lounge Radio. I think we're going to start trying to do like some streaming fun times with that after we record Reading is Fundamental over the next few weeks. So keep an eye out for mentions of that on social media, especially if you're trying to get in on those games with us. I also played some Blaster Master Zero. Obviously, you know, I'm a big fan. I think it's fantastic. Game. I've also been working on Kingdom Hearts 1.5 on the 1.5 plus 2.5 HD remix disc on PlayStation 4. Fantastic version of the game. Now that I've played Kingdom Hearts at 60 frames a second, I kind of never want to go back. What about you, Psyche?
For me, it's all been Mario Kart 8.
Yes.
Like I said, I love that I can play one of my favorite games without having to turn my Wii U on. So, I mean, the thing is like, it's funny, when we were playing last weekend when Kart 8 had just come out, and then it was like, okay, now we're going to play some Smash. It's like, man, too bad we couldn't just play Smash on the Switch instead. And yeah. I feel bad, but, like, you know, the Wii U is just that. I mean, the Switch is just that good that I'm just like, the Wii U, you know, rest in peace. But can all the stuff that I want to play just be on the Switch now?
Yeah, seriously. All right, anything else?
Nope. I've picked up Puyo Puyo Tetris, but I have not had a chance to pop it in my Switch. But, I mean, obviously, I already played it, your copy on Xbox One that you had imported. So, I mean, I already know that the game's great. It's Puyo, it's Tetris. So, I mean, how could you go wrong?
Indeed.
So, with that, I think it is time to go over to our social links.
All right.
So, we have a few tweets to catch up on. A couple tweets coming from our live episode that we did about Breath of the Wild. Thanks to Monarch Piratica, a.k.a. Trainer Sulker from our Stabcast.org show, who shouted at us out saying, join us in chat while we listen to another amazing episode of GameBooey.org Live. I might be a little biased, but I think these guys rock. Thank you, Sulker. JD saying the live format was a lot of fun. Thank you so much. We love doing the live episodes. You know, I definitely look forward. There's going to be at least one more this year, I would imagine. Probably at the end of the year, hopefully one in the summer. No promises being made, but we love doing that. It's a lot of fun. And your enzymes with something a little different, saying, now that Anita has announced the end of her Tropes versus Women in Gaming series, is it worth looking back at on an episode? And, you know, that's a very interesting question, your enzyme. I mean, you know, and the funny thing is that we'd always been bouncing around the idea of talking about, you know, dedicating an episode to the topic of women in gaming. And the reason we had never done it to this point is because, as two men,
I am not having that conversation without a woman voice or a female voice on this show. And so we have reached out to a few of our lady friends in gaming and would like to have that discussion at some point. We would like to look back specifically over Tropes versus Women in Games.
Right.
Talk about that. Talk about how it's seen both by us as men and by them as women.
Mm-hmm.
But again, until we can secure those voices and really, you know, schedule it in a way that makes sense, we will not be doing that. But it will happen at some point. I just cannot say.
Right. And by no means do I want to say that things have miraculously gotten all better and there's no problems with the way that women are treated both within the industry and within the community at large. But I do feel like some of the worst parts is I feel like it's not quite, I feel like I'm not even qualified to say this. I can't say that it's not as bad as it was, but my perspective is that it seems like it's not quite as bad in terms
yeah,
of the,
I'm not prepared to say that.
I mean, just, I'm not hearing about people getting swatted as much. And let me just say it like that. So, I mean, I'm hoping that is not something that's happening as much. But again, like I said, I'm not qualified to say that. That being said, I think the climate might be a little bit more, I don't know, just when it was a topic that was more in the forefront, I would say, the climate just did not seem, let me put it this way, bringing female voices onto our show to talk about these issues in the climate when it was in the, you know, the midst of everything, I would not have felt safe, you know, bringing that.
Well, yeah, and that's a
bringing our friends into that sort of climate.
Exactly. That's a really good point, is that, you know, we had talked about doing an episode like that a long while back now, and frankly, I just didn't want to pull any of these people I care about in my life into a potential target. That having been said, I think we're at a point now where we can and will do that, which I guess actually speaks to Slaggy's point that things seem a little less.
Well, the thing is that it kind of speaks just to a larger, and I mean, not to get all political here, but you know, the whole Gamergate thing, you still see every once in a while Gamergate, I support Gamergate, LOL, but I mean, at large, really, it's that sort of movement, I feel, has kind of been absorbed into the whole alt-right, you know, neoconservative, whatever you want to call that, you know, not to stir the pot. But I think with a lot more people, you know, for example, with Milo, you know, a lot more people being aware of who he is not because of Gamergate, but because of all the other bullshit that he's done. You know, a lot more people are starting to realize, oh, that there's this, you know, group of people who are shitbags. So that's what I mean. By no means do I mean to imply that it's gotten better, and I cannot speak to that, but I think more people are kind of waking up and seeing, like, the divide ideologically in this country. So that's more than I wanted to say. But yes, I think definitely there's a lot of value in that, your enzyme, and I think that, you know, I know that Anita Sarkeesian got obviously a lot of hate, a lot of criticism, but I mean, and I have to say, I haven't kept up with all of the Tropes versus Women in Gaming videos, but I definitely was, you know, keeping up with them when they were initially launching, and I thought that she had a lot of value in what she was saying, and she was not trying to force anything. She was just trying to start a dialogue, which, I mean, I think that, you know, that's definitely something that's always of value, and, you know, definitely something that every once in a while we try to do here on Game Buoy, you know, also keep things light and fun. But, you know, every once in a while bring up something serious, and we've done our kind of heavier episodes as well. So, yeah, I think it's probably a good time to kind of look at that focus, I think.
Indeed. Do we have any more feedback?
We do not. But if you like to give feedback, we love it. We love your feedback. We love your iTunes. I guess they're called Apple Podcasts now.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
But I'm just going to say iTunes. iTunes, Google Play and Stitcher Radio, subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
You can mail us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And you can visit us at GameBuoy.org. That's the thing. You can do that. There's 136 of these here, but you can also tune in to us where?
You can listen to us over on the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com. While you're there, you can check out such other lovely, wonderful shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, and Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues. You can listen to myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series and the current season of the Super Sentai meta series, upon which it's based out of Japan, over on Ranger Pridecast. And rounding out the group of VOG shows that I'm focusing on, you can check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. I'd be remiss not to mention the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and their sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You can also check out Slaggy's show, Reading is Fundamental, where myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. It is currently in season and actually kind of on fire. I think the last few episodes have been a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
Slaggy.
Aw, bitch.
I want you to take us to a place.
Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, one of our longest, oldest friends in the gaming podcasting scene, along with Video Game Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. And back with a vengeance is the Joystick Jockeys.
Yes!
They are back from their hiatus, and
they
are two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them, and just some great folks. And great folks would also describe our buddies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. We love those folks over there. As far as us and our sister shows, because we do way too much podcasting, probably, we have Anime Buoy, which is your monthly port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. We did an episode about the amazing Your Name, very, very highly recommended. I believe still in some theaters, so go check it out. We have some exciting things coming up. I know Captain Spike is going to be taking the lead for a Gundam 101 episode.
Yes.
Which might be this month, might be next month.
Think it's more likely that we'll do a current anime season discussion first and then do that.
Right. So we're glad to have Anime Buoy back, albeit on a monthly format. We've been happy to pump that out. And we also have same type attack bonus podcast, or Stabcast for short, over at stabcast.org, your twice monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon. And that features myself, Captain Spike as Trainer Spike and Trainer Sulker. Excellent. Our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project they contributed of Zelda music and some gorgeous funk sound. I was trying to do those, like, the legal parts of car commercials. They're like, void, we're prohibited.
No, that was a super good attempt.
But yeah, Zelda Reorchestrated was a wonderful project. And we forever pour a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain.
Excellent. All right. Well, that about wraps it up tonight, this lovely Saturday evening. Man, what kind of losers are we? We spent our Saturday evening talking about video games on the internet. No, actually, it's a pretty rad life I'm living. I want to thank y'all out there in Internet Radio Land for listening to us talk. I hope you have had half as much fun listening as we have had talking, because seriously, man, this has been a lot of fun. It always is. We will be back at you probably in 1 week. We have a little bit of a backlog of episodes to catch up on before we get to E3. So look forward to that. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And Tachi Kabi Super Rainbow.
Mamma mia, I want some of your pasta. I guess, has anyone ever talked about that Mario's Italian accent? That's kind of, is it like offensive? Is it kind of an offensive stereotype?
I don't know, but you committed.
Also, I want some pasta. You know, I just realized that, you know, the pixie from the Legend of Zelda cartoon from the Mario Super Show?
Yeah?
Like, she was kind of meant to be like Tinkerbell because, you know...
Wait, you're just realizing this?
Well, like, you know, like, she totally wanted to fuck Link, like,
well,
right?
Yeah, I mean, and, that, like, yeah...
And Tinkerbell, like, even in the Disney version, Tinkerbell total, like, especially in the Disney version...
Are you gonna Tinkerbell say wanted Peter's Peter?
Ah!